What's up, AfterBuzzers? We are breaking down the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Midnight at the Concord. Finally, someone else in the family knows Midge's pastime. I'm so excited to break down this episode. Probably one of my favorite stand-ups of the season, so stay right there.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
I want to play one of Jeff's when you did the cruise ship music. So I feel like we could replace that group for you.
We could work that in. Yeah.
Isn't that just Jersey Boys?
There was more. It wasn't just Beach Boys.
You know, okay.
Chicago. All the boys.
You guys, I'm so excited to break down this episode. Before I do, I'm Steph Sabra, and to my left, the wonderful Amy.
Hi, guys.
What's
up? Excited to be back.
And Brianna Phipps.
Hey, everybody.
Jeff Graham.
Feeling marvelous.
Ooh. Midnight at the Concord. It was such a great episode. We're going to be breaking down kind of how she got to New York with the B. Altman in the car ride via Benjamin, which was great in itself. And then the big moment reveal of her doing the stand-up and A, being there. It was... I couldn't have imagined a better scene, honestly, because Midge did her Midge thing, but even more hyped up. And then we'll talk about Joel and his family and kind of what's happening in the background, and obviously Susie. And then we will have our very special segment where we focus on a female comedian.
Actually, I'm going to replace the special segment for this week. I have a history on the Borscht Belt in the Concord Hotel.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
We like history.
Yes.
And then we'll get into some predictions, but before we get into breaking down the topics, what was your guys' overall thoughts?
You know, I was trying to figure out this whole season, like, the balance of how they were going to make the Catskills work. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this episode was, I was just blown away with how well they're making the Catskills work.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this was the first episode I watched. Like, it's been hard for me not to watch ahead, and I'm really glad that we're going to be covering the next episode right after this, because I couldn't not watch another episode after that ending.
Mm.
This was one of the best endings for an episode this season for me. And I also had to look up where the Catskills were because I didn't know.
No big. I didn't either. We have a history on that coming up for you nerds.
Yeah, thank you.
I thought this was a great episode. It's interesting. I feel like Maze, normally shows that sometimes sort of take their time and have a bit more of a languid pacing can bug me. But something about Maisel, even when the show sort of takes its time and there's not a ton of plot, it's so beautifully shot and the production design is so nice. I'm just kind of along for the ride. So I think these two episodes that we'll be covering today, which are 5 or 6, maybe had, you know, an episode and a half worth of plot rather than 2 episodes. But I don't care because I can watch people just rowing their boats through the lake at the Catskills Mountain or, you know, dancing. Those dancing scenes are incredible. And it's enough for me to really enjoy it. So I'm still loving the show.
I agree. I was thinking that last season we got a lot more drama happening. There was a lot more discovery between the characters. And this season, even though there's not as much happening per episode, it's in the details, I think. So every line I want to write down, like, everything they say per character is so specific for the character and has a bigger connotation behind it, especially in Abe. A lot of his words are written in this way where you're like, you're not sexist, but you're also kind of because of society. But it's just those details I loved. And then I'm with Brie. The ending was just insane.
I do think it's smart of them to be kind of like just giving little bits here and there as they go, because business-wise, it's going to create a longer show for them.
Yeah.
If they gave too much, like, we'd run out of story and plot lines to be able to do. So I think it's smart of them. And it's more realistic to have somebody that's like, not just like right away in your face, now I'm huge and I'm a star.
That's right. Actually a great point, because I was thinking in it, it was the first time I started thinking, oh, this could be like a Gilmore series where you're invested in the characters as opposed to the story, where like most of the shows, since they're so highly produced now, you know there's going to be an ending. You're not as much invested in like the lifeline of each character. This is kind of world building where you are.
Yeah, and I mean, similar to Gilmore Girls too, like even when the pacing of the plot is kind of slow, their dialogue is so quick and so smart, and so like sing-songy.
It's almost like they have the same show.
I was gonna make that joke, but you stole it.
If anyone knows if it's the same showrunner, leave it in the comments for us. This would be mind blown if that's the case.
She's like kind of a thing, right? Like people in the business like know who she is.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Kind of.
We should research it.
I do want to say when they were in the hair salon, which I love the scene, and this is where Midge finds out that she has a position opening at the counter.
Revlon counter.
The makeup department.
This is funny.
It was hilarious because I just loved the setting of it, but I also had this feeling of, you're this committed to B. Altman, where is this energy to comedy?
Okay, but is it bad that my very first thought wasn't even about like, oh, she's committed to this job? My first thought was like, oh yeah, she has a job. She took 2 months off a job. That's and wild. They let her.
I know. This whole like everyone takes 2 months and goes on vacation, it's not really a thing anymore, is it? Teachers, I guess.
We can't even take a day off without you like, if I take an hour off, I'm like all of a sudden a delinquent.
also just like taking that much time off, one, I feel like I would just go stir crazy, and two, when I got back, I'd be like, oh my god, I'm so behind on everything. I know. Not just work, but like my life.
You can't.
It's so stressful.
You can't. But did what do you guys think about the B. Altman that part of the story? Do you think it's necessary anymore? Is it more just providing filler for what she does in the meantime?
Well, I mean, considering where we get to a little bit later in the storyline, I think it makes sense because she does remind us this is her day job. This is how she makes money. Unless she wants to be dependent on her parents completely, like she needs some sort of income.
Yeah.
I love seeing the juxtaposition, too, between the fact that she is doing stand-up comedy as a young female in the 50s, and then she's also doing the super stereotypical job for a young woman in the 50s.
That's like, really true.
And she can be equally, like, into both of them, even though, yeah, like, that was some real excitement that she got called into the makeup counter.
I do love that you point out that, like, you can have those interests, but you can like, it's not bad for women to be like, I still like makeup and hair and clothes. Like, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
We've touched on it in this show, but the much easier route would have been to make Midge, like, ugly. Sort of like Susie. I don't want to say Susie's ugly, but, like, less stereotypically feminine. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's the hurdle. But it's very interesting that the hurdle is that she's too feminine to be taken seriously.
Yeah, because that gets brought up into the end of the episode.
Yeah.
It is true. And I just... She had this very Legally Blonde moment when she found out, when she said, like, Revlon!
And she did
like, I was like, that's a moment where she's looking and sees that she got picked for the bar review or whatever it was. I just loved it. Before we get into Benjamin, though, Amy, you have a message from two our beautiful After Buzzers.
I do. So, yeah, just before we jump into the next thing, just wanted to say thank you for making us the ESPN of TV Talk. We do need your help, though. We want to make sure we continue to grow, continue to put out great content for you guys. So make sure you're subscribing on YouTube. You're rating us on iTunes. Of course, 500 stars, because I think that's the new rating system on there. Make sure to leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing. Only if you like us, though, obviously. Because, I mean, really, too, like, just getting to be a part of, like, this AfterBuzz family and coming here and doing this every day, it's just, like, such a cool thing to be able to talk about something that you love so much, like Miss Maisel, or me and Steph also do the SNL show, and just being able to sit back and just geek out with other like-minded nerds who want to just talk it out about this stuff and be able to have you guys tune in is super cool. So thank you guys very much, and I hope you continue to tune in and tell us how awesome we are, like, all the time.
We do love compliments.
I just want to shout out Nicole Faith in our chat. Jeff was chiming along with her, but she's saying that she feels like the show is almost like a musical, and just the way that we're saying the lines are very sing-songy, I would totally go see a Marvelous Mrs. Maisel musical.
Oh, yeah.
My heart just stopped. So excited.
You're like, how do we produce it?
See, guys, you, just like Amy said, you guys commenting and giving us all this stuff, you're our, like, fifth panelist on this show.
The definitely. Musical Mrs. Maisel, or the Marvelous Mrs. Musical.
Oh, I would definitely mess that up. Yeah. Announcement.
You have to keep Maisel.
You have to keep Maisel. Yeah.
The Mrs.
Maisel.
Okay,
Mrs.
let's talk about Benjamin.
Mrs. Maisel. I'd see that.
The Mrs. Maisel. No, Benjamin's great, more important right now because Bree was wrong, which...
We don't know that for sure,
okay? We don't know for sure, but...
You don't know his life.
He's definitely...
He appears to not be gay, which is against my prediction.
And appears to be way more likable than we thought.
Yeah.
So he ends up getting brought into the picture because I guess he buys a box of cereal when he goes to the Catskills, and when it's done, he's gone. I love that.
It's an example, Seth, of the writing that you're talking about, how even when this show sort of takes... Puts plot in the back seat and just lets it hang out there for 10 minutes. It's always sharp.
My question is, they get meals. So is he choosing to have cereal over the meals? Is he having cereal as a snack? I'm just trying to figure out the timeline of how long does this box take to get through.
Yeah. Let's really plot out the cereal.
That's the
story
most important
right
part
now,
of the episode.
Where he's like mapping it out. He's like, if he has two bowls per day, he...
Wait, are we going to release a podcast called Cereal, but it's spelled C-E-R-E-A-L, and it's about this episode of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
Yes.
It's all just about Benjamin cereal. It's all just about different cereals every episode. Like, if he had Trix versus Chex... Which one
back
would take
then
to get
it was
through?
For sure yeah. Raisin Bran or Wheaties.
But how does Asia McClain factor in, guys?
How does Mrs. Missile factor in? She ends up going back to New York with him, and I love this car scene because it was just another time to implement her comedic mind. Amy, do you ever do things like this where you kind of mimic what is going on, things like news?
I used to, the song American Pie.
Love it.
Already like 10 minutes long on car rides with my family when I was like six, I would make it like 10 years longer and I would just keep singing my own verses of it. None of it made any sense.
I would love to meet 6-year-old Amy Maestri. She sounds like she's quite a ham.
She was wily. Real wily.
Yes.
My favorite part, though, honestly, wasn't even her stand-up on this. It was the comedic timing of her, like, being asleep and him turning on, like, actual music and her being like, oh, finally. And him being like, nope.
Oh, yeah.
Back to news.
He's so slyly a dick.
Yeah. But it's in a way that, it's funny, when we first met him, he just seemed, like, roll your eyes annoying. But the writing has done a good job of making him, like, endearing annoying.
As we go on, he is going from beginning of Tangled towards end of Tangled.
Well said. I also didn't realize this was Zachary Levi.
Yeah, she didn't either. Yeah.
No, I said it was someone I recognized, and I just couldn't pinpoint, like, I didn't look it up. And then when you said... like Shazam and everything. I was like, oh my God. Like, how was I so stupid that I couldn't even think that this was Zachary Levi?
That trailer did just drop. So it's like, this is weird.
Shadam.
Yeah. Shadam. Do you guys, and then it ended up being where it led to a date because he really did like, she wins over everyone with her personality. Are you guys sold on him? Were you sold on him at this point or did it take the date night?
I think it took the date night for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was like, I don't know. He might still like get through the date and then revert.
It's that dialogue between them, though, when he was like, she said something and he said, can you maybe not talk the whole time? She's like, I don't know. Can you not be like a jerk or something? He's like, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I love that. Like, at least they're honest with each other. But there was like a slight second where I was kind of worried that when he left to go do the phone call that he wouldn't come back.
Oh.
I was like, they seem like they're having a good time. But like, oh my God, what if he leaves? What if he just stands her up now?
Yeah.
I thought he might, too.
Not in that car ride outfit, because Midge looked amazing.
Yes.
She looked so good.
Miss Missile was bringing it.
Yeah.
She also just... He's so tall in comparison to her.
He is.
Like, makes me realize how short Joel is.
Yeah.
Poor little Joel. Doesn't stand a chance. I think that car scene was just such great writing, too, because it was so simple, and it said so much about both of their characters. Mm. In that one really just simple, nice scene to like kind of see like, yeah, he's, as you so well nicely put, he's kind of a sly dick.
It's a great point.
I've always thought, sorry to jump in.
No,
I've just always thought that sometimes you see the best acting when there's no words.
Mm. Yeah. And to jump off that, we give the Paladinos so much credit for their dialogue, but this proves that they're also just great filmmakers. You know, this is a great example. You could almost argue that Amy Sherman Palladino and Daniel Paladino should be writing plays because their stuff is so dialogue driven. But moments like this show you that they're also great filmmakers.
Well, they already have their first idea, Lizzie Borden.
Hell yeah, yeah. This was funny. This was a nice way to, all of us have had that moment when we leave Act One and we're like, this isn't good, but you feel the obligation to stay.
But sometimes you stay and it ends up being worth it, and then sometimes you stay and it ends up not being worth
it. True. But
what if they'd stayed in what ended up being the best second act of a play ever?
That's what made it such a salacious scene. This was the most risque scene we've seen on Maisel. Leaving before the second act.
Oh, how could
very
they?
Controversial.
I loved how she played this scene though, where she was questioning if she should leave because we forget that she is like the dirtiest mouth in town.
Yeah.
But then things like this, she's very principled and conservative about.
Uh huh.
Exactly.
That's so true. Well, really she gets that from her parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also just. I like that when she tells somebody else we're leaving, he's like, "Well, don't be a jerk." I'm like, "You're the one saying this."
Amen. So true.
Like that's his line, I guess. Like everyone has their line that they won't cross. That's his.
It's a tough line.
Fast forward to Susie calling Midge, being like, "WTF? Like you literally left the place I came here for."
She has such a good reason to be.
Oh yeah.
What? What was Mitch thinking?
And for, of all things, to go back to the city for?
Revlon.
Susie and her plunger were just left, just devastated.
Susie's plunger is now one of my favorite characters.
What's her name
show.
Again? The plunger?
Oh, she did.
Leslie, yeah. Lauren?
What's the guy's name who's equally being a scam artist?
Zach? Like, Frank?
I love their connection or how they talk. Yeah, the crisscross.
He reminded me of Dave Child, which listeners might not know. We have a host here named Dave Child. Look him up. They have a resemblance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, God. No, I don't want to look him up because now I'm going to look at him and just be like, where's your plunger? And Susie says that she booked a gig, and this is where things get really exciting. Oh no, you two. They're doing a staring contest again. They did this once to me, and it's so hard to play off of it. Because do we go silent, or do we keep talking it out like Midge did?
I just ignore it, Steph.
We know when to jump back, and you just keep going.
You have tears in your eyes.
It's really intense, Steph.
Let's talk about the comedy club because there was a few different topics to hit with it. One of which to start off was like the sexism in comedy where the guy was like holding this picture of, I guess, someone Susie told him Midge would look like and said she doesn't look like.
It was Eisenhower's wife?
Yes, maybe Eisenhower.
Yeah.
And that's there was a great joke where it was like, "I like Ike" at the very end. And that was a callback to Mamie Eisenhower.
I kind of felt bad for Mamie Eisenhower.
Yeah, I know. Shading her hard.
Like, maybe she was funny. I looked at a
picture.
I looked
at a picture of her, and she wasn't terribly bad looking.
A first lady. Like, she nails it in terms of her look. Like, it's like, she looks like she could
Jeff, that's the most backhanded compliment
I hate to say. It's just that thing where it's like, you see her, and you're like, oh, yeah, like, if you had, like, an older middle-aged Republican husband... You'd look like this. I don't even mean that in a bad way. It's just, like, very on-brand.
Yeah.
No, I don't know why it has nothing to do, and it has definitely nothing to do with Julie Andrews, because she doesn't look like that. But right. Now all I can think of is Julie Andrews and Princess Diaries being like, thank you for being here today.
One of her best roles of the many.
And I like Ike. Just, it's all good. Safe place.
I like
place.
Ike.
Yeah.
Then she ends up going on stage, dealt with the BS.
Sorry, Pamela is the plunger's name. I looked it up.
Oh, thank you.
Pamela.
That's very important.
Very important. We're the after show.
And she starts off good, but then she looks into the stand right after she's talking about her dad or right after she's talking about sex, sees her dad.
Well, she says sex with Papa.
Yeah. Papa? Like the creepiest zaddy girl issues, that word.
I predicted it so hard. I was like, oh my God, her parents are going to be here. I said parents, so I didn't know it was going to be.
No way.
Justin. Yeah, the minute that they were there and it was like the. When I didn't know what a blue room was,
blue.
And we were trying to figure out what blue meant. I was like, oh, I bet her parents will be there.
Because it's in the Catskills, this club.
Yes.
I did not think anyone was going to be there. When I saw him, I was shocked. But we do know Midge to be the type of comedian in person where when she gets nervous, she goes in. She goes way harder.
Oh, my God. Her, like, conscious stream of thought comedy in this... So many props to Rachel Brosnahan.
Mm.
She had so much nervous energy just like radiating off of her, but she was still hitting the joke so hard at the same time.
It's just so amazing to see someone just talking and being hilarious, but they're like, they're just talking and like saying the jokes as they come to her, but then having to revert like because of something with my mom. Not my mom. My mom's not like that.
Yes.
It's been overstated, obviously, but Rachel Brosnahan is seriously so good in this show. And the show would not work without... this is such a demanding role. It's so, you can watch great stand-ups, but they can't act stand-up comedy. It's really, really hard. Yeah. And so what I love about this scene is she's not only being a great stand-up, like the thing I love about the show, whenever we see stand-up, she's always the funniest, you know? Even like Luke Kirby, who plays Lenny Bruce, he's great. But I'd say Midge is the funniest stand-up in the universe of this show. So like props to her acting. And this scene, to work, it had to be funny. It had to advance the plot, but it had to have these like underbellies of like Freudian issues with her dad. And it had to advance the story and develop character. And it did all of this all at the same time. The scene worked so well. And this is just so hard to do right. This is so the degree of difficulty here is so high. And they nailed it. It was such a good scene.
So amazing.
That's yeah. such good points.
Yeah.
And Tony Shalhoub too. Like props to him. Because he has to sit there and not laugh.
Yeah. yeah.
And that would also be really hard to do in that scenario.
yeah. And did I see some tears in Tony Shalhoub's eyes too? He had that like glassy-eyed like actor thing where it's like, this is for Miami. The tear, it's like the tear won't fall, but they will fill the eyes. We've all seen it. Julia Roberts does it in Homecoming.
And I like,
that's when you're a real actor.
And also, the thing that this show does so well for me as well is the like slight comedy where it's not even, they're not going to be like, we're going to make you laugh out loud, but we're just going to do this ridiculous thing. So it's like he's being so serious, like we're going home, and then puts on the hat. And I'm like,
yes.
Yeah, you're yeah. right. It's the show will always keep it just a light enough, you know? Yeah. They'll never let it get too intense. They'll lean into the drama, but they'll always button it with a little note, note of levity.
Yeah. Amy Sherman-Palladino told a Hollywood Reporter about this scene. We wanted it to be Abe of all people. We thought he would be the most effective person to see her.
Yeah, I agree with that. It would have been a very, very different outcome if Rose had been the one there.
Yeah. Yeah, and also, I mean, raising the stakes with it being Abe to be the one to see her, and then also that it was a blue night. So, yeah. I mean, like, again, like, they just, like, created the
which
perfect
now
storm
I
for
know
them.
Means late night raunchy humor.
Yes.
yeah, blue in general is just, like, anything that, like, crosses, it's, like, R-rated.
I was like, trying to figure it out, and I was with a friend, and they were like, maybe police officers?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't think that's what they're going for, but...
Amy, have your parents seen your stand-up? I started doing it when I was 15, so they had to get me into most of the clubs that I was performing at. I knew your parents would be this cool.
I still had braces.
Do you? Are you a very blue comic, Amy? I've actually never seen your stuff.
No. I well, you know, when I started, I couldn't be because I would get grounded.
Yeah.
But so I think that kind of was instilled in me. No, I kind of go back and forth, but it's not my brand.
Yeah.
Of what I do, but you know, every time an F-bomb's necessary, so yeah, you just go for it.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think why it's so special to watch her do it is it's that kind of like almost when Amy Schumer first came out, she would come out in like a cute dress, hair done, heels, and when people didn't know her yet, and then she would just like be raunchy and talk like a sailor, and people didn't really know what to expect from that, and they liked it, and it was like that was her thing. And that's almost kind of like her thing in this, where she does just say what she wants to and will go blue, but she's still like cute as a button the whole time too. So
and she
I think that's
had
special.
An experience with a woman too, like I would not have picked out Midge for that.
I would.
Oh my God,
you would? I just feel like with like the play thing, like there's things where she gets so.
Yeah, but I feel like it's never with sex. Like with sex, she's open for everything.
I could just picture being like, well, why not? You got to try everything once or something.
Like, why should like, British?
It's my attempt to do.
Do the her like.
I'm
like the first episode. She's dyeing her pubic hair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Maybe it was that night.
Yeah.
Not that I'm thinking about it or anything. Let's move on.
Anything else on the comedy club before we get into the car?
Just such a good scene.
Yeah.
Just leave it at that.
So the car scene was really funny because this is the first time we've had Abe be introduced to Susie and be in an enclosed space for that matter.
And the plunger was there.
Yeah. Pamela. And that kind of leads to Abe just being in, that was a dead silent car ride. They get to the place and he can't even speak.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so, everyone like gets afraid of parents yelling. My dad was like, when he was really mad, he got silent. And that was way scarier to me. And because you don't know what to expect. When they're yelling at you, it's like, okay, they're going to yell at me and then it's going to be done. Mm-hmm. But if there's, it's like, how long will this last?
It's so wise men, though. It's such a Rose move. And, like, I think Abe thinks he's so different from his wife, but this was such a Rose way to handle this.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Oh,
yeah.
Well, I think so. Susie says it all, too, just with her facial expressions, just watching everything happening around her, wide-eyed.
Yeah.
And then the fact that she told Midge that she had balls. Like,
yeah.
Big. Well, from what she was saying, yeah. I don't think I could say that in front of my dad.
She basically told her dad he had an okay dick and just she a said great he brain. Had
a not okay dick. Yeah.
You're being
like, it wasn't
kind.
Even okay. It was like mom had to think of something else. Just
luckily,
to be okay.
Secure in his math.
I thought you said meth for a second.
Oh, God.
I was like,
no.
Wait, what show are we
seven.
In?
Yeah.
Just they do a Breaking Bad crossover. Yeah.
But we, they wake up, Susie and Midge had like a sleepover sitting. They didn't realize, I guess they fell asleep. And that ended that scene with them. And ended the episode. But I do want to hit quickly on Joel's whole side story. So we see him flirting a little bit more. And I like this. I know, Brie, you kind of have hopes that they still could get back together. But it seems like they're doing things healthy.
Yeah. I'm not saying that I want them back together right now. I'm saying I still just have hopes that there potentially could be a reconciliation at some point. And I think we still see this because even though he's flirting with other girls and even though his parents are pushing him, like, you still see this kind of like hope in him.
Yeah.
But I don't think right now is the time, and I don't know if it ever will be, and maybe they won't get back together. Maybe there will be a different scenario that shows up that I like better. But I like the idea that they're not just cutting it completely clean, because I don't think that's realistic in any relationship.
Mm-hmm. It's just handling this really well. Like, I feel like I'm typically on board with any of these potential romances, which I think is really hard to do. In the first season, I wasn't as interested in the personal lives of the characters as I was in the professional lives. But this season, I'm more balanced. I'm enjoying both. So that's credit to the story development and writing in this room.
I mean, they made Joel be someone you couldn't stand to someone
could
you're like
not stand.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Jeff, to your point, them starting the season the way that they did in Paris, fully focused on family.
Yeah.
Like, and then really finding that way to balance how she's still, you know, working at her career while she's up in the middle of nowhere in the Catskills. Like, yeah, they found a really good balance this season.
Yeah.
Except for her kids. There's no balance for the kids.
Well, yeah, where are they?
Where are they?
We talked about this last episode.
She went
episode.
Back to New York and didn't seem like she was going to go back to the Catskills for a sec.
They left Esther in the car. Like, we talked about this last episode, Brie and I did, for a good 10 minutes because it's this question of decision, and I'm quickly curious on you what you guys think, if it's for just a comedic punchline for Midge and showing the times, or is it showing to a bigger picture that there's a kind of a problem between Joel and Midge's parenting?
I think it like could be a little bit of both.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
I think, like, I mean, again, we've talked about how the show is like made fun of itself a little bit. It's been a little bit meta about how terrible they are as parents. And so I think it's like, because the show has acknowledged it itself, I'm okay with their choice to just kind of say F these kids.
I'm curious now about Midge's upbringing. Was it the same? Like, when she went up there as a kid, is this why she had all those experiences? Because her parents just were nowhere around her?
Well, I think episode 6 looks at this a little bit.
It does. And we'll get into it.
Yeah.
But also, I'm kind of now intrigued if when this show does end, I'm kind of on board with the kids having a spinoff in their older years and about how their parents have affected their being
as adults. They are.
We do, on the note of parents, we kind of really see that Joel's parents don't only, like, they don't only have, like, these alienating funny factors to the viewers. Joel, Abe and Rose cannot stand them.
Yeah.
It seems like the whole camp can't. The camp made an announcement.
Including Joel, which I like that moment. That's I think that's next episode.
But like, sorry, I don't want to give anything away. So was the point where he's on the phones this episode or episode 6?
I thought this was this episode.
Yeah, I think
it was.
Okay. He had a good point there where he's all like, I'm sorry, not all of us can like take 2 months off work. Like, that's literally what all of us just said.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit on Moishe's side with that. Like, yeah, he has to still do his business. Maybe he's being too loud with it.
Two phones?
But but taking 2 months off work and being like, we don't work up here. That's 2 months.
Yeah, that's moolah, baby. I get that, but cussing people out. He's like, they're digging me into my grave. Like, super dramatic. But
all the Jewish words was the best.
So funny.
Well, and that's what they excel too at, like, mayhem scenes. Like, that opening scene when, like, the Maisels first get there and it's just absolute mayhem. Mm. It's so good because you kind of, like, have anxiety at the end of it, but you're just like, that was lovely.
That was a beautiful shot.
Exactly.
Anything else on this episode?
Joel can bowl.
Yeah, Drunken Ball? I guess he can. That's Bull and good. Joel. It's not comedy.
It's true. That's the thing we end on.
I mean, Joel's, but he, you know, everyone point. Has different talents, and he, right? he does have one.
She knows I'm not funny, but I do judge comedians, so I'm no better funny. Than Joel.
Yeah. You have an Wise. Affable way.
Oh, I thought you were saying she wasn't funny. I thought you were agreeing.
Yeah, I'm like, well, yeah, no. agreed.
Like, terrible. Joel will say funny things to, like, women think Joel's funny.
Yeah.
But
well, they
stage.
Think he's funny because they are single and don't want to be.
Well, I think it's interesting,
we
too,
saw
because
that with the bowling. Sorry.
They actually let Midge have the female lead is both. She can mm-hmm. entertain at a party and make her friends laugh and make her husband laugh, and she can do the same on stage. Joel can only do one.
Yeah.
And that's so often happen, like, oh, yeah. the funny friend, but then they try to do comedy and it just doesn't quite work.
But also just going off that, because saying she can do both, like, I just want to touch quickly on just the fact when Labor's, when she's on the date, he's like, can you go back to baking Jell-O molds?
Yeah.
Which oh, is, yeah, which because we didn't really talk about when yeah. she like told Benjamin, I'm a comedian. Yeah. When, I think that was the point. She's like, no, I can't go back to just being a housewife.
Yeah. yeah. No, I'm so glad you brought that up. That was a pivotal moment because it showed that Benjamin was not opposed to that too. Mm-hmm. And he really enjoyed comedy on a level that was similar to Joel, but different in regard that he doesn't want to be a comedian, but he likes that kind of crass humor.
Well, also, it's probably better that she told him, because otherwise she just knows all these random men at this deli.
Midge knows everyone. And Lenny Bruce.
And Lenny Bruce.
Lenny Bruce.
I'm still rooting for them. Let's get into our special segment.
So I was interested in the Concord, and I looked it up, and it is a real hotel, which kind of got me into the Wikipedia wormhole of the Borscht Belt. So I'm just going to read a little bit from Wikipedia, guys, and I'll try to keep it fun and exciting. But it is very interesting for those of you who are into history. So the Borscht Belt, or the Jewish Alps, they call it, is a nickname for the now mostly defunct summer resorts of the Catskill Mountains. Interestingly, these resorts were most popular from the 1920s to the 1970s, primarily because at the time, anti-Semitism was so rampant in the U.S. that they had to vacation here. They couldn't go to other traditional resorts because they were like goy only. Like if you were Jewish, they'd turn you away.
Wow.
They were frequented by families of middle-class and working-class Jewish New Yorkers. They're Borscht Belt hotels, bungalow colonies, and summer camps. So, like, this vibe is very much like what was the tourism scene at the time. And it's because anti-Semitism was so rampant that they were often denied accommodation elsewhere.
It's so interesting with that, too, because you, like, all we see right now is Jewish people in the camp, so mm-hmm. it's like you don't even, and they're all having such a good time, they're not bringing any of this up. It's kind of interesting.
Definitely. Some of the Catskill hotels were converted from farms that immigrant Jews had built in the early 1900s. As the area grew, it began to cater specifically to Jews, so it provided kosher food, synagogues, and other features of Jewish communities, including entertainment. So along that, nearly all notable Jewish entertainers would hone their skills at these resorts in the Sullivan County area. Fallsburg became a major catalyst for American stand-up comedy. Legends like Woody Allen, Rodney Dangerfield, Seinfeld, Henry Youngman, Billy Crystal, Buddy Hackett, Andy Kaufman, and Joan Rivers like trained here, which is really cool. So that's why I think comedy in general has a very Jewish identity in this country, and it's kind of interesting to see the history of that. And I also read about the Concord Hotel, which just a little bit on that. That's where Midge's set is. Let's see if I can find it. Here we go. The decline of the Catskills resort industry takes hold in the 60s. That's kind of when things started to not be as popular because city dwellers were moving out to air-conditioned homes in the suburbs. Plus, air travel made it much easier to, you know, go places that weren't just in the Catskills. Because the Catskills is like 3 hours from New York, so it's not that far. Close to, you know, the East Coast Jewish center of the United States.
No, I like that you're saying that because there was a few times where I'm like, was it realistic for them to leave yeah. and come back?
I think it's like somewhere kind of in between Massachusetts from what I saw.
Yeah.
And it's New York.
Yeah, I think that's right. So it is like about 3 hours from like the metropolitan areas of the East Coast, which makes sense. But yeah, it's air travel and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 really took hold. Jewish clientele of the Catskills chose to kind of vacation in other places. So that's the history of the Borscht Belt.
Is the Concord still open?
I was having trouble like figuring out if the Concord is still open. I think if it's open now, it's just kind of like, I get the impression that all like the interesting and rich Jewish culture's kind of been commercialized, and now it's like a chain, unfortunately. Yeah. But I might be wrong on that. So if you're interested in more history of the Concord, there's plenty online.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Mm-hmm. I love learning about that stuff because I always like to see how much the writers are paying attention to setting or if it's a completely different reality.
Well, Amy Sherman Palladino's dad would do the circuit because he was a stand-up. So, like, he did the Borscht Belt all the time. So she kind of grew up around this, which is super interesting. So.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Which is why this show hits so well with everyone.
Yeah.
Are we going to get... We shouldn't get into predictions.
No, but I do have some news.
Oh!
AfterBuzz TV News.
It makes me feel so...
It's official, baby.
So, at the Producers Guild Awards, which happened, I believe, last Saturday, Marlo Sis Maisel won for comedy series, which now makes it one of five shows in the comedy circuit that has done this. Maisel, it's the first consecutive winner since Modern Family won a record four in a row.
Wow.
Other shows with multiple victories are three-time champs 30 Rock and Sex and the City and two-time winner Curb Your Enthusiasm. So it joins the ranks of some pretty legit shows there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, it says that it scooped up 8 Emmy Awards last year, including Best Comedy Series, Best Comedy Actress, Best Supporting Comedy Actress, and Critics' Choice Awards. So basically with all the awards, it's won. Now that they have this second one here, it's also gave Amazon its third statuette in the category against Transparent.
Mm.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yes. It's interesting because both Transparent and Maisel aren't like straight ahead comedies, yeah. I would say. Especially not Transparent, yeah. Which by the end of its run was like the most tragic show anyone's ever seen.
Just crying at the end of every episode.
Not that I disliked the show, but it was like comedy.
And Brosnahan is now the first person to repeat in the best comedy / musical actress at the Globes in 10 years.
Wow.
Get it, Rach.
Damn.
Wow.
I love that
breaking
it shows,
records everywhere.
Like,
or tying records.
Like the evolution of like just TV and comedy and what, you know, consists of a comedy. This is an hour long show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's with the likings of like Curbed and 30 Rock and,
true.
You know,
Sex
like.
City. Sorry, I love Sex
and the City. Yeah. Larry David, Sarah Jessica Parker, same thing, right? Yeah.
Jewish.
It's a good point, though. It's like interesting to put it in that, you know, it's. We're actively watching TV break the rules every single year, which has been really great. We're living in the golden age, y'all.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Cool.
I
do love that. Okay, you guys. Well, we're not going to get into predictions because right now we're covering episode 6 right after this, which is entitled Let's Face the Music and Dance. So make sure that you guys stick around. We'll be on a different stream, but you'll see it right on the comedy page of AfterBuzz TV. So, and if you guys can't watch that right now, where can we find you guys in the meantime?
On the podcast, which hopefully some of you guys are listening to. If you're watching on YouTube and all of a sudden you have to go somewhere and want to just hear the audio, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. We want to make sure our audio and video listeners are being seen and heard.
Yes.
I guess both, because our podcast listeners aren't ever being seen because video. My name is Jeff Graham, and you can find me on Twitter at Jeffrey C. Graham.
And you guys can find me at Bri, B-R-I _ Phipps, P-H-I-P-P-S on Twitter and Instagram and on the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend After Show Sundays at 6 p.m.
Nice. You can find me at Amy Maestri. You can figure out how to spell it on your own.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Steph Sabroth. And then I'll tweet about how to spell Amy's last name for you guys.
Aww. Making it easy.
We'll see you guys soon.
Bye. Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.